I'm delighted to welcome Deborah Granick. She is the director of the Academy Award-nominated film Winter's Bone. Her new film is called Stray Dog. It's the winner of the Best Documentary at Los Angeles Film Festival. It screens on Saturday, the 18th of October at 5:30 at the CCA here in Santa Fe. It's part of the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is a documentary about a man named Ron Hall. He's a Vietnam vet. He runs an RV park in Missouri. He's a biker. He attends a lot of military events. How did you meet him, and how did you decide to make a documentary about his life?
I met Ron in what is known as the Biker Church of Branson, which is a small church specifically designed to be inclusive, run by bikers, and designed to include them and wear leather in church. And I was scouting for Winter's Bone at the time and saw a billboard for this church and went in. You know, they were very open to people coming in and checking it out. And I sat in the pew next to Ron and was caught unawares that I would be sort of sitting there and, you know, actually kind of checking people out as I was. And he was a prominent presence on the pew. He had this tattoo that I didn't expect to see, which was said the word Vietnam on it, you know, very clearly. And you know, it was just one of those moments where I instantly started wondering about this individual next to me. You know, what did that word mean to him? What was his involvement? What was the lasting impact on his life? What was he doing now? How had he coped in the intervening years? Just the curiosity mounted as the service was going on, and then in the parking lot, I caught his attention and asked if he would speak with me for a moment, and he was very willing, and told him about this, the narrative, the fiction film we were working on, Winter's Bone, and he was willing to hear me out on that, come to an audition. Turned out he was really well-suited for the role and was a very willing participant who was also willing to bring friends, which we really needed. We needed some locals to join in the scene. So in that very short period of time, the chance encounter yielded a more robust collaboration, and that is sort of, that's the origins. And then deciding to do a future work with him was based on, again, sort of the randomness of just going to someone, you know, saying goodbye, but seeing him in his real life setting, his own home, not on the set. And in those minutes, he pulled into the driveway, announced he had just been in therapy. He was coming home from therapy. He had run late, so there was therapy. There were bikes in the yard. There were small dogs. There were interesting neighbors. You know, it was like, I sometimes say it's sort of like being, it's like trick or treat for a filmmaker, where you just open your bag and you didn't expect someone to throw in like all these bonbons. You know, just these rich loaded themes, rich visuals, texture, layers, complexities. So, you know, everything that storytellers and documenters seek, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very endearing film. I've seen it twice now, and Ron, he's such a loving guy, a helpful person. He's continually helping others with dealing with everything from grief to putting down a kitchen floor. And we see him dealing with this deep moral pain about what he did in Vietnam and feeling this sort of horrible guilt about what he did, the killing and the mutilation, and this process of attempting to forgive yourself but not wanting to forgive yourself. Is this something, I mean, in the therapy, is this something that he's come to as an older man? Has he been sort of dealing with it all along?
It's been his life's work, really, to get to know himself and scour and think, and at times, you know, darkly ruminate on things. Sometimes it towed him under. He also had a lot of really aggressive, quick, angry responses, which are extremely characteristic of some, well, almost like overly familiar aspect of his generation, and especially combat vets. He struggled with, you know, years of assault charges and things where he would just wig out and truly lose his grip on his ability to use his mind to process something before his emotions would get him. And it was very late in his life that, you know, it's almost they have this mythical quality, these seven riders, these seven other vets who came into his RV park on bikes, who all had let him know they actually were from your part of the world. They were from the far west, and they were coming through Missouri. they said they had small dogs, and they just had a campfire or bonfire in the RV park. Something happened in terms of discussion, and they started picking up on Ron's very familiar behavior, and they just, you know, in this manly way, this way that I like to see, I like to observe, you know, when certain kinds of men that aren't socialized to talk about feelings do reach out to other men, and you know, it's something along the lines of, look, brother, I recognize some stuff in you that we have in ourselves, and I just want to let you know we got some help along the way, and where's your VA clinic? Where's the nearest one? You know, and he said he could not have heard that from anybody. You know, and there was no other individuals on planet Earth that he could have heard that from other than these veterans. And
yeah,
he did go to seek someone, and then it was sort of a miracle that, although his therapist is not himself a combat vet, he was a biker.
Right.
So Ron felt elated. He felt that he could also talk about the biker part of himself. And at that point, it wasn't a chaste teddy bear biker. It was more of a hardcore place where sometimes hierarchy and aggro behavior was also being, you know, vented and explored and expressed and celebrated. So the fact is, it was a really good match. And Ron, you know, had a therapist who could read him passages from Crazy Horse. You know, he had a therapist who could read him very provocative, interesting historical material about warriors and healing. And, you know, so it was just like this wonderful intervention in his existence that he felt like he could really learn from. But it took a long time.
And what's extraordinary for us watching this film is that you are there. I mean, it's hard to believe that there's somebody with a camera there all the time. And must have taken, I mean, what was the process like of establishing trust, and not only with Ron, but with the people in his world and his therapist and all of that, so that you could be there filming?
Ron is definitely someone who enjoys a discussion with even, you know, very, very open to outsiders, very open to questioning other people, and you know, kind of a compassionate interest or an intellectual curiosity. So that already, you know, he is not an insular, and he can be a shut-in. He can cut himself off through a distressed set of emotions, but he actually is a worldly individual, given that he came of age in Southeast Asia and then did spend significant time in his life there, and then got very attracted to Mexico. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's something about Ron that enjoys telling some observations and stories about his existence, his perceptions. I wouldn't say that he's a super performative person, but there's a side of him that is a matchmaker, a person that says, let's all do a barbecue tonight, you know, a person who actually sets up the scenario so that people can bring down their guitars, put the meat on the grill, open-hearted human being most of the time. So it was not like trying to scrape down walls and violate someone's, you know, really personal private life. He allowed that to happen, and then he's a paver, so he, you know, he could say to a neighbor what we were up to. And then the hardest part of this filming process was definitely on the ride across country. That is for many veterans, that's a very private ritual.
Yeah.
And the distrust of media and what we would do with that material runs high, and the way that they've been represented over time definitely has left a bitter taste. That being said, they also do know that, you know, in a lot of small towns, the local news will come out, and it's a dramatic scene often when the bikers come through a small town. A lot of towns show them a lot of love, you know, put on a covered dish event, you know, do things to celebrate their annual ride. But Ron was someone who could put it in context and say, this is not, you know, we're not chasing down people who don't want to be photographed. You know, he was able to put the parameters out there and be our guide, be our translator. However, without him, I don't think we could have been on that ride. So he ended up being invested. He, you know, I think he felt ultimately that he had some kind of skin in the game by the fact that he began to feel that what was making it worthwhile for him was the idea that he had a positive experience in therapy and thought others could also. You know, it's like, it's not proselytizing as much as, like, but it's definitely coming from that place of wanting to share the good news, you know, or helpful news. He does feel it is, that he is in service to helping someone. If he can turn to someone and say, this did work for me, it may be something you want to try.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like this film would be appealing to virtually anyone in the United States. I mean, it breaks through every kind of stereotype of class and whatever demographics, and it shows people's humanities and their struggles, which are really common to everybody. But at the same time, what I really appreciate is it doesn't seem like you intended to do a kind of ideological thing with the film.
You know, I feel like that is correct. I think being a coastal person and asking people in a different region of the country to have this dialogue means that you can't come armored with your beliefs that you may have cultivated in your coastal life or your metropolitan life, whatever life it is. And therefore, it often, I had to use kind of a mantra, like some of this is using the skills of visual anthropology. These rituals that punctuate the lives of some vets, different parts of the year that commemorate certain things, or even the more recent strengthening of this practice of attending other veterans' funerals, ensuring that the funerals are supported and that there's some kind of outpouring of, just so it's not such a lonely, isolated, cut-off affair. And, so there's been actual additional things that have embedded themselves in that culture. And I had to use that skill that saying, I don't know what it means, because I'm not of that particular culture, but I am wanting to photograph it and then let people wonder alongside. I wonder what that means to Ron. I wonder, is that solace? Is that bonding? Is that sustaining? It was just a state of wonder that I was in. How is this person organizing his life? How is he navigating? How is he making his life feel worthwhile? How is he not getting weary? How does he not get towed under by heaviness? So, I think you do have to restrain and say, I can't really come, this is not really about trying to make a final assessment. It's really about documenting very specific moments in American life and letting us, reflect on them.
Yeah. It's striking how rich with ritual and meaning this life is. And there's so many beautiful details, like Ron is learning Spanish. He's got a computer program where he's learning Spanish so he can speak to his Mexican wife, Alicia, whom I think anybody watching the film just falls in love with. And they have these little dogs that are so adorable, and they're really great to their dogs. And I wanted to ask you, why is he called Stray Dog? I mean, that's his nickname. That's the name of the film, too.
Yeah, he got that biker name, and he wears a patch that has that on it, because the oldest dog in that little brood, Jack, was a stray dog, and Ron felt a tremendous outpouring of just truly, like, I want to say, they were maybe his first tidal wave of healing emotions. It felt very meaningful and charged for him to be able to be the guardian of this dog and adopt it and rescue it. And from there, he realized that he did have, that the dogs were of great therapeutic and life reinforcing emotions, that he had a way to unconditionally guard and provide a safe environment, and he basically felt like he could never fail. Like, no matter what, he would be able to provide a safe and loving, home for stray dogs. And I've come to feel that that is sort of the purest form of outreach that Ron can do. Is, I don't know why I always refer to some of the people who are struggling that end up in his park, as stray cats. I don't know where stray cats and stray dogs differ, but maybe because I have to, separate the terms just to be clear who I'm thinking in my head. But I think the idea of stray and lostness is a theme. I'm always touched by the line that the real person, Annie Washington, in Ron's hometown, the woman that he visits, who lost two people in her family in the recent wars, she says, you know, I thought I, you know, I feel lost. You know, do you ever find your way back? And he's like, I was lost for years. You know, and that is a theme that definitely plays out in the lives of warriors and the families of warriors. But I think it also plays out with certain ways that people get excluded from the economy and find themselves living in poverty, feeling like there isn't really a place, there really is not normal housing for them, there really is no place for them to necessarily have a stable income. So I think he definitely is someone who spiritually is connected to the concept of stray.
Yeah.
Strayness, and how do you anchor strayness? You know, what are the small lifelines that can be thrown out occasionally?
Now, have you shown this film to the people who were in it, to Ron's community?
We did. We had to do that as a sort of a protocol before showing it to anyone publicly. And we were lucky to have a little place in Springfield, which is about 40 miles from where he lives, that had good viewing conditions. And we were able to show it in this little cinema for the people that live in the park and for Bob Bronson, who's the therapist, the VA therapist. Some of the prime local people that were in the film were able to come to that screening. And then since then, some others were able to come. We were recently in Hot Springs, Arkansas, this past weekend, and some other people that participated in the film were able to come to those screenings.
How did they respond?
Well, because they look good in the film, and because biker, well, there's differences. The people who are seen on bikes and are seen to be having a very good time on like certain outings to the Buffalo River and whatnot, enjoy it, because there is something so photogenic about taking a curve and looking beautiful on your steel horse. And then I think someone like Bobby, who's a neighbor who deals with the issue of his teeth and what he can and cannot do to sort of help himself in that realm of his health. You know, it's got to be bittersweet. You know, I think. But there's frankness, you know, there is utter frankness. You know, Bobby and his neighbors don't, it's not about having shame about losing your teeth at a very young age or having a difficult time with that. That is so much of the reality. I think Bobby was someone who maybe appreciated the opportunity to just be open about the things he contends with in his life, and you know, and the fact that it's something that he is a survivor, so maybe it's also a portrait of his ability to survive.
Right.
But what I'm trying to say really is that I don't think those are easy scenes, and yet I think ultimately he was okay with it. I've never heard anything from him other than, you know, that it was a curious proposition to be involved, and I think the fact that he also plays music in the film, that is true to his, you know, it's dear to his heart. So that was sort of him having a chance to show some of the positive aspects, the lyrical aspects of his existence. So the material is not always easy, and yet I do feel that people felt that it was a worthwhile experience to participate in the making of the film.
A film like this must, on some level, come together in the editing room. You've got probably just tons and tons of footage. What was that process like?
It is tons of footage. My close colleague, Victoria Stewart, is the editor of the film, and she did organize and clip up, 230 hours of footage. That over the period of 3 years, that's sort of what we collected. And then we start, like, all documentary process. You start with a large assembly. You pick everything that you think is interesting. So that's an eight-hour assembly of scenes that at first blush work in some sense. Either they're funny or they're touching, or you know, and then you find out that a third of those don't follow up, a third of those don't have a through line, and then you're left with maybe 4 hours where there's material that has a through line, meaning it grows somehow. The immigration process can be followed. There are these benchmarks. It continues. It progresses. Same thing with veteran issues. You know, that is a wealth of material that has different themes and has ways to illustrate it and develop it. So you look for the through lines from this material that someone can actually follow, you know, not unlike reading some other kind or following some other kind of narrative. And then, of course, you lose a lot of your favorite things in the process. You lose maybe some of the uproarious comedy that you just still makes you laugh to this day.
Right.
And yet it's like an orphan. You know, you can't. There are funny moments in the film, and yet, you know, you can't have all of them. So some of those we tried to put in the extras. We tried to put those on the website just so they could live on a little bit. Editing is rewarding because you see yourself get a very tough skin, and it's you know, I don't want to make light of anything, but you know, there's this very prolonged discomfort of saying goodbye to things that you feel very attached to.
Now, this film is doing very well in film festivals. It's here in Santa Fe with the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. Are you also trying to show it in venues where, for example, veterans are likely to see it, like VFWs, that kind of thing?
We are. We are truly working on that, and hopefully there may be some kind of distribution out there now in the changing landscape of how films get around, where people very specifically, some distributors really do try to reach out to specific organizations, so that it's the idea of a gathering, where you try to get films to people, to communities that might have a very discreet and specific interest. And so that is something we would very much like to get involved with. One of the people that appears in the film, he's a younger veteran. He's also a VA counselor in Colorado, and he's going to by knowing about the film, by being and having been involved with it, slowly we think the word would spread, and that veterans groups will have access. At some point, they'll just have access to it. But you know, trying to get it out there and circulated, it's truly that's another art form, and we've got to find, you know, the practitioners of that distribution art form. So we're on the search for that.
Deborah Granick is director of the film Stray Dog. It's winner of the Best Documentary in the Los Angeles Film Festival. It screens Saturday, the 18th of October, at 5:30 in the afternoon at the CCA. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.